Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. BirdwatchersGeneralStore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at VortexOptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Welcome to our show number 1048, during which we'll pay a visit to the Talkin' Birds Science Corner, where our own Debbie Bleacher will report on a fascinating and controversial extinct bird resurrection biology effort. Also today, Mike O'Connor will unveil his big list of backyard bird feeding mistakes. Not his mistakes, because he has never made any, but our mistakes, yours and mine. Mike will help us avoid more backyard bird feeding blunders like that one. This is an example. I want to give a shout out to the members of our Talking Birds flock. That's the Facebook group for Talking Birds listeners. If you pay a visit, you'll see some really wonderful posts from our flocksters. And if you like, you can join the flock while you're there. Just go to Facebook, facebook.com, and type Talking Birds Flock in the search bar. Be sure not to include a G in talking. Meanwhile, as we do our show live here on July 27th, we're in the final week of Plastic-Free July, representing a worldwide effort to fight back against the wild overproduction of plastic that's resulting in more than 11 million tons of plastic entering our oceans every year. And we have a sobering statistic to present that adds just a little more evidence about the overwhelming amount of plastic that humans are generating and then casting off, and that will live on as toxic plastic trash for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And I just need to make a correction very quickly here. I said 11 million tons. That's actually not right. It's about 10 times that. But here's the study. The new study published in the journal Nature estimates that the North Atlantic Ocean alone contains 27 million metric tons of nanoplastic. Plastic particles 100 times smaller than the width of a human hair. According to the study led by researchers from the Royal Netherlands Institute for Sea Research, that figure is 10 times higher than previous estimates of plastic pollution across all the world's oceans. To put the number into perspective, that's 27 million tons of plastics. That 27 million tons is about 1.5 times the weight of a Nimitz-class aircraft carrier. As our friends at Beyond Plastics say, we can all do our part in the fight against plastic pollution by reducing our use of plastic and avoid using single-use plastics altogether. And it seems like Plastic-Free July is a good time to start. Just about every week on our show, we present an avian audio postcard, thanks to an idea created by our own Freya McGregor, and now being created by many Talking Birds listeners sending us these reports from all over, and today from the Sunshine State. Here it comes.
Hello, Talking Birds fans. This is Kathy Wrigley, and I am currently at the Lake Apopka Wildlife Drive in Central Florida, one of my favorite birding hotspots, and I'm out here watching at least 30 barn swallows as they're chattering and they're sitting on some reeds. And I actually came out here searching for a bank swallow, which is not common in our area, but we get an occasional few. And no luck yet, but it's a beautiful morning. It hasn't heated up yet. There's also out here a least bittern that's quietly sitting up on the reeds, some boat-tailed grackles, some common gallinews. I've got a great egret flying overhead, and there's a great blue heron to the side. So it's a great morning, even though it's July and it's still hot. Get out there. Happy birding.
Happy birding to you, Kathy. Thanks for those wonderful sightings there at Lake Apopka Wildlife Drive in Central Florida. Well, if you're looking for and listening to birds, we'd love to get an audio postcard describing what you're observing, no matter where you are. And your backyard is most definitely an option. So just record yourself seeing or what you're seeing and or hearing into a smartphone, maybe, and send the resulting file to ray@talkingbirds.com. That's ray@talkingbirds.com. And now, our mystery bird. It's a preview of our mystery bird contest. We'll be doing that in just a little bit. I want to get you ready for it with some clues here. Our mystery bird is a smaller-than-crow-sized long-tailed raptor with short rounded wings, a small head, and a long, usually square-tipped tail. Adults are blue-gray above with horizontal reddish-orange bars on the breast. Juveniles are brown above with brown streaks below. Our bird is an agile flyer that flies through dense woods to surprise their mostly songbird prey and can be found in most of the U.S., some as year-round residents, some migrating to breed in Canada and to winter in Central America. That's our mystery bird. Oh, yes, we have some beautiful prizes to go along with that, including from Brome Bird Care.
Mega 600 feeder.
That's right, a Mega 600 feeder with an extra-large tube that holds nearly 2.5 pounds of seed. It's easy to clean, it's chew-proof, and it includes the Brome seed ventilation system to keep the seed cool and dry. And a Birding by Ear course in the LarkWire app. LarkWire's highly customizable game-based courses have identification tips from some of the world's best birders and a uniquely effective approach to learning. And these are courses that really will enable you to master bird sounds and have fun doing it. As our friends at LarkWire say, the downside is that doing the course might make our mystery bird contest just a little too easy for you. But worth a try. Let's try that mystery bird. It's a smaller than a crow-sized long-tail raptor. You heard the other clues there. And the sound and the prizes in the contest will be coming along a little later. We want to salute another Talkin' Birds ambassador. If you're new to the show, well, ambassadors are Talkin' Birds listeners who have become kind of part of our unofficial marketing department, spreading the word about our show and about what we're trying to do. And that, of course, is promote birding and conservation. We want to say thanks to Carla from Eustis, Maine, up on the High Peaks Scenic Byway near beautiful Flagstaff Lake in the Bigelow Preserve. Thank you, Carla. And here's another Talkin' Birds ambassador who thinks being one is a pretty good idea.
My name is Dr. Joseph Blanda from Akron, Ohio. I like being a Talking Birds ambassador because I understand that birding is such a healthy activity and the radio show is such a good resource for people to get more excited about birds. You should become a Talking Birds ambassador because it's a great network of people and it'll broaden your horizons on things that you can do in enjoying birds.
Thank you so much, Dr. Joe, Talking Birds ambassador, who would like you to join him and the ambassador's family. And that's easy to do at talkingbirds.com. Right at the top of the homepage, you'll see that Get Involved tab. And if you would click on that, you'll see how easy it is to become a Talking Birds ambassador. And then you'll find out how easy it is to be one as well. Still to come on our show today, we'll visit the Talking Birds Science Corner with our own Debbie Bleacher. We'll be talking about a new attempt to bring a long-lost bird back into existence. Also today, Mike O'Connor will join us for Let's Ask Mike Live, and he'll talk about our, not his, biggest backyard birding blunders. And up next, more about Hirundo rustica now, as this week's featured feathered friend.
Well, to add a little follow-up to Kathy Rigling's Barn Swallow-rich audio postcard from Central Florida, we figured we'd make the Barn Swallow today's featured feathered friend. The Barn Swallow is a shimmering blue-black above and light sandy brown below, with a reddish-brown forehead and chin, and a deeply forked tail that distinguishes it from all other North American swallows. It careens gracefully over fields and open water in pursuit of flying insect prey, often cruising just a few inches above the surface of the ground or water. It's the world's most abundant and widely distributed swallow species, breeding all through the northern hemisphere and wintering over much of the southern hemisphere. As their name suggests, barn swallows build their cup-shaped mud nests almost exclusively in barns and other human-made structures. It's said that in building their nest, male and female barn swallows make as many as 1,000 trips to collect the mud. In the backyard, barn swallows won't frequent your feeders filled with seed or suet, but they are known to come to platform feeders or ground-up eggshells or oyster shells. And if you have a shed out back, leaving a door or window open might encourage them to nest inside, especially if they can find some mud to help in constructing a nest. Thanks in part to its enormous range and a population of 190 million individuals, the barn swallow has been placed in the category of least conservation concern. Today's featured feathered friend, Hirundo rustica, the barn swallow.
Come up to the lab and see what's on the slab.
Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Ray.
We've recently heard about the so-called de-extinction of an ancient mammal, the dire wolf. So now there's a similar project with the giant moa?
Yeah. These projects are brought to us by a company called Colossal Bioscience, based in Texas. This past April, they claimed that they brought back the dire wolf, which was a predator that went extinct more than 10,000 years ago. So now they've announced that they plan to bring back the giant moa.
And that's the flightless bird that lived on the South Island of New Zealand, right? Extinct for 600 years?
That's the one. It's 12 feet tall, so it'd be cool to see. But before we talk about that, I'd like to talk about the dire wolves because they're relevant to the MOA project, and they're also really controversial.
Tell me more.
All righty. So in April, Colossal Bioscience created these three adorable snowy white wolf pups and said they were the world's first de-extincted dire wolves. Now, scientists outside the company called the announcement misleading, saying that the pups were genetically modified modern gray wolves, like designer dogs. And in fact, the company's chief science officer has confirmed that they are indeed just gray wolves with 20 modified genes.
But they did use dire wolf DNA, right?
Yes. They took samples from two specimens and compared it to gray wolf DNA so they could figure out what to change. So there's a conversation happening now about how you define a species, but that'd take too long to talk about in the time we have. My point in bringing up the dire wolf project is that the giant moa project will be similar, because ancient DNA will be used as a basis for modifying a modern bird.
So how do we make a giant moa?
Let me give you a recipe. You ready?
Ready.
The first step is to extract DNA from all 9 species of extinct moas.
Well, that sounds easy.
But of course. Next, compare that ancient DNA to the DNA of a modern bird so you can pinpoint the characteristics of the giant moa. Tinamous and emus are its closest living relatives.
Okay, I guess I'll just need a gene sequencer for that part.
And maybe some tiny tweezers. So step 3 is to make those changes in the germ cells of a tinamou or an emu. I should mention that the company hasn't decided which modern species is best, so it's okay to use whichever one you have in your cupboard.
Oh, nice. So that's the easy part. Now?
Now comes the hard part, growing the chicks. You'll need surrogate parents, male and female, to fertilize and lay the eggs. Again, they should be tinamous or emus. However, neither one can lay an egg that's big enough for a giant moa. So the recipe stops here while we wait for Colossal Bioscience to invent an artificial egg.
Might take a while. So what's the final step?
Well, the final step, the egg should hatch and the chick should grow up to look like giant moas. And then scientists should argue about whether they're really giant moas or just genetically altered modern birds.
Well, I want to close by asking the question that I'm sure many listeners are asking. Why do this? Is there a need?
I haven't seen any evidence that we need the giant moa, but maybe I'm missing something. That said, the artificial egg technology could help endangered species if the company can develop it.
All right. And I believe you'll be putting a link to this project, Debbie, on our social media pages.
You bet. And if anyone listening is inspired to make a DIY project like this, please let me know. Meanwhile, I'd like all of our listeners to watch Jurassic Park.
And see what happens when you fool with Mother Nature on a grand scale. Thanks, Debbie.
You're welcome, Ray.
Our own Debbie Bleacher there in the Talking Birds Science Corner. And welcome again to our show number 1048. And up next, it's our Mystery Bird Contest in just 1 minute.
The flutter of a tail feather, the flash of a wing bar in mid-flight. You don't always have a lot of time to identify a bird in nature, let alone to appreciate its beauty. But with Vortex Optics, you'll have the power to bring every wild moment closer. When you choose Vortex, you're choosing to have a partner in the field as passionate about nature as you are. Whether you're spotting old friends on the backyard feeder or packing for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to add a few species to your life list, Vortex offers a full range of optics and optics accessories for every birder and every budget. And whether the birds are taking you to another state or another country, you're always covered by the Vortex VIP warranty, an unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. If you'd like to learn more, or if you need help choosing your next optic, give Vortex a call at 1-800-4-VORTEX or visit vortexoptics.com.
It's our mystery bird, a smaller than a crow, long-tailed raptor with short rounded wings, a small head, a long, usually square-tipped tail. Adults are blue-gray above with horizontal reddish-orange bars on the breast. Juveniles are brown above with brown streaks below. Tell us what that bird is or take a guess. As always, no correct answer means a drawing determines the winner of these beautiful prizes right here. And by the way, the number I'll give you right now, and I'll repeat it in a moment, 781-837-4900. Prizes include from Brome Bird Care, that magnificent mega 600 feeder with an extra large tube that holds nearly 2.5 pounds of seed. It's easy to clean, it's chew-proof, and it includes that Brome seed ventilation system that keeps the seed cool and dry. And our other prize, one of our newest prizes here on our show, is a Birding by Ear course in the LarkWire app. LarkWire's highly customizable, game-based courses have identification tips from some of the world's best birders, and they also have a uniquely effective approach to learning. You can really learn bird songs and have fun doing it. That's in the LarkWire app. And those are our prizes on the Mystery Bird Contest. And a bonus prize question awaits as well from our friends at Feather Friendly. 781-837-4900 is the number to call, which we urge you to do, as always, as soon as you can. 781-837-4900. Meanwhile, we'll check in with Mike O'Connor. It's Let's Ask Mike Live in just 1 minute.
Hog Island Audubon Camp has welcomed nature enthusiasts to its shores since 1936. It's a program of the Seaburn Institute, and the island hosts five-night sessions for adults, teens, and families taught by the world's leading naturalists, ornithologists, and artists. Hog Island campers deepen their relationships with the birds and the ecosystems around them during the island's immersive educational camps. New for the 2025 camp season is Let's Go Birding Together. Scheduled during peak fall migration, this session is a safe space for queer birders to connect with nature and each other while learning ways to foster a similar environment in their community's home. For full Hog Island schedule, program details, and to register, visit hogisland.audubon.org.
Let's have that music. There it is for Mike O'Connor there at the famous Birdwatchers General Store. Has some good advice for us today for sure. And good morning, Mike. We have to wait for advice. It's not something that comes, you know, instantly like that. We have to wait for I think we're about to get it now. Well, good morning, Mike, again. And I want to apologize for all the mistakes we've all been making in our backyard.
Right, bird putting out bird feeding.
Yeah, but I'm glad you're here to straighten us out on some of these.
Well, before I do that, I just went outside and hung up my new feeder. It's a giant mower feeder. I expect giant mowers to be coming any minute now, according to Debbie, so I'm ready.
Yeah, they'll take care of that feeder for you, no question about it. I think they'll dispense with that without any trouble. Yeah, the giant mower, they want to bring it back from extinction. I don't know. What do you think?
I'll get the feeders ready.
Get them ready. This could this could mean some big business for you, Mike. I mean, really big. But meanwhile,
were we talking about? What was the real?
Yeah, the mistakes we make in the bird. I have a feeling I know what the number one mistake you're going to cite is, but we'll see about that.
Oh my God! Yeah. So right. It's summertime, and we get a lot of people from out of town, and people have trouble with. And it seems like people still not getting good bird feeders and doing them the right way. So I'll just go through a list of a couple of things people make mistakes for. Number one, if you need to buy a bird feeder, it's always go to a birding store, and there's enough around the country, so they're not hard to find. Kind of try to stay away from the discount places, the big box stores, the hardware stores. Go to a place where you can talk to the people, ask them what they use, what works for them, and get something that's solid, well put together. You don't want to get one that's novelty, like the shape of a pickup truck or a clown head. Get something that's easy to clean, easy to maintain, and well-made. And some of them have extended warranties. Kind of look for that. But go to a birding place, and they'll give you some better advice. Number one, the other mistake people make, and I get this a lot, is people go to fill the feeder, and the birds haven't finished it. But they're out there, so they just go out with their bucket of birdseed and top off the feeder. And they get into the habit of that, and then at the last bit on the bottom, last inch or two, is debris and wet seed and mold, and becomes really hard to clean. So when you go to fill your feeder, if there's a little bit left, just don't top it off. Dump it into a coffee can, rotate it out, or toss it on the ground for the morning doves. But get out of the habit of just filling the feeder that has some seed left in it, because it becomes disgusting. The other thing is, if you put out a feeder for the first time, or even your existing feeders, don't put them up just in the outside and kind of, or whatever is super convenient for you. The best place is, and you've had these people on your show, put the feeders right next to your windows. Birds hit windows a lot. That's a big problem. And especially a feeder situation where they get chased by hawks, have them right by the window. So if they do get startled, they know enough. They can't turn into the glass. They have to turn away. But if you have it like 10, 15 feet away, they'll go right towards the glass where it's dark and looks like there's reflection of trees, and they smack the window. So move your feeders either closer or at least 30 feet away. That's the recommendation, so the birds have enough time to adjust.
Kind of counterintuitive for some people. They say, we want to make sure we don't put it close to the window because that could be
right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I always put my feeders, I have feeders stuck on the windows with suction cups. And that really helps break up the reflection and prevents collisions. Right. You know, you're right about that. The other thing I tell people to do, if you're going away, and a lot of these people are traveling, we fill our feeders before we leave. Don't do that. Take your feeders in. I get so many reports of birds get stuck in feeders. They get tangled in whatever kind of crazy feeders they have. Take them in, clean them out, and then when you come back, put them out new. The birds will always come back, but don't just fill them and then leave them for a couple of weeks while you're going away. Right. And my number one complaint about...
I know what it is. Yes. No,
go ahead. Tell me what it is.
Well, it's about that mixed seed.
The dreaded mixed seed, you know, somebody's grandmother used to use that, and it spread through the world, and they can't stop loving that. Mixed seed is to your disadvantage. birds like one ingredient when they come to a feeder. You can use whatever ingredient you want. Most people will find sunflower will get you the most birds. But if you want to use white millet, you want to use crack corn, you want to use peanuts, Niger seed, whatever you want to use, just use them one at a time singly. And then if the birds come, great. If they don't come, then try something different. But if you use a mixture, most of it will be picked out in order to get to the seed that they want. It'll end up on the ground. And you spent a lot of money for no benefit for the birds. And you'll, no matter what the package says with a happy cardinal and rainbows and everything, it's to your disadvantage. Single never, ingredients all the way.
Never trust those happy cardinals. They're out there. That's how they get you.
Yeah, although when the giant mower feeders come out, maybe that'll change.
Everything will be okay then. Mike, thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds groovy. All right, see you later. Bye.
Great advice there from Mike O'Connor, and we're back to the mystery bird contest, trying to identify this bird. I guess you can tell this is not a songbird, but what is that bird? We have Rose in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Hello, Rose.
Hi, Ray.
How are you, Rose?
I'm doing well, thanks. You?
I'm doing very well, and let's see how we're doing on the old mystery bird contest. I believe you heard the clues there, Rose, and
yeah, I did.
And the clues and the sound, yeah, the sound and the clues there. Yeah.
I'm thinking American Kestrel.
American Kestrel, another one of those top quality guesses that we love to get, but not quite. You said close, but no cigar, if I can use that expression.
Okay.
All right, Rose, thank you so much. Not an American Kestrel that used to be called the Sparrowhawk. So what is it? But we're getting close. And we have Dorothy. She is in Hanover, Massachusetts. Hello, Dorothy.
Good morning, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Dorothy. What do you think on the old mystery bird there?
I think it's the sharp-shinned hawk.
Sharp-shinned hawk. And you said it so clearly that we couldn't mistake it, and it is absolutely correct. Yes, indeed. Nice work, Dorothy. The dog, is the dog barking there? Did I just hear? Yeah, he's agreeing with that, or she?
That's Ruby.
Ruby, the sharp-shinned hawk, of course, one of those birds that can thank the banning of DDT in the U.S. for their rebounding population. They had declined really badly during those DDT pesticide years from the mid-40s to about 1972. Well, we have time, Dorothy, for a bonus question if you'd like to try one.
Sure.
All right. Let's see if I can find it here. Oh, here it is. This is a conservation question. Global cosmetics giant Mary Kay announced a major milestone this week in its legacy of empowerment and environmental responsibility. What is that major milestone? A, it's multiple choice. A, using zero plastic in all its products and packaging. B, using high-efficiency heat pumps to heat and cool their headquarters. Or C, transforming their iconic pink Cadillac into a fully electric vehicle. One of those is actually...
I think it would be A, I hope.
A, I would like it to be A. I have to tell you, it wouldn't be bad if that was it. And I hope they will do that at some point. But actually, it's C, their new iconic pink Cadillac is a beautiful electric vehicle. Made its debut on Friday, July 25th, as a matter of fact, at their annual seminar. And their CEO, Ryan Rogers, said that with the introduction of the all-electric Cadillac Optiq EV, they're honoring their iconic legacy while driving into a transformative future. How about that?
Oh, that's good.
It is good.
That is good.
Dorothy, stay on the line. We'll get your info because we're out of time here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ray. Have a good day.
Thank you. Sharp-shinned hawk identified by Dorothy. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with you, us. We'll see you next week.
Bird show. I like that. I love it.
Ray Brown's Talkin' Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store. Orleans, Cape Cod. BirdwatchersGeneralStore.com.
By Vortex Optics, with the VIP warranty. Their unlimited lifetime promise to keep you and your optic covered. Learn more at VortexOptics.com. And by Hog Island Audubon Camp. For full camp schedule, program details, and to register. Visit hogisland.audubon.org.